Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Carol Van Dam in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Tuesday, July 22, 2014. Fresh fighting is reported in Jonglei State.
They are outside Ayo. So the government forces in the last 2 days they have been shelling. First, they have been shelling our positions at Kwe and Paloi. And then after shelling was halted, they made an advance on our positions and we fought them.
And one Juba businessman tells a harrowing account of his run-in with authorities before fleeing to Uganda.
Removed the solar, and even he took my car. One car of mine, because took it.
Who took your car?
These soldiers.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. The United States is condemning the SPLM in opposition's ground attack on army positions in Nasser, Upper Nile State, earlier this week. Deputy U.S. State Department spokesperson Marie Harf says in a statement, "We call on both parties to immediately end all such attacks and fully adhere to their May 9th and June 10th commitments to cease hostilities and begin the disengagement of forces to be monitored by IGAD." Harf also says with famine conditions looming in some areas within the next few weeks, it's urgent that both parties immediately recommit themselves to inclusive political negotiations. Meanwhile, there are reports today of yet more fighting, this time in Jonglei State. The government says rebels loyal to former Vice President Riek Machar attacked SPLA positions in Ayod County, but were pushed back by the army. But the rebels have a different version of events. They say government forces have been shelling their positions in Jonglei. Jonglei State Information Minister Judy Jonglei Boyoris says many civilians fled as the SPLA pursued the rebels. He says the officials are still trying to establish the exact number of casualties. Boyoris is calling for calm in the state capital, Bor.
Rebel attacked Ayod County, especially Ayod Town, and they fought, and the rebel was chased away from the town. So the people, maybe they hear that the fighting was continuing. They try to go away, but it is too far. It is Ayo. It's not in Tuchis, it's not in Duke, it's not in Panyagor. It is too far from Ayo up to Bor. It's not easy to come in one day. So anyway, rebel were chased away from Ayo town.
Opposition military spokesman Lul Rue Kwang says the fighting around Ayod has been ongoing for some days. He says that government forces attacked rebel positions in the county, not the other way around.
They are outside Ayod. So the government forces in the last 2 days they have been shelling. First, they have been shelling our positions at Kwe and Paloi. Mm-hmm. And then after shelling was halted, they made an advance on our positions and we fought them. And today in the morning, We drove them back up to Ayod. That was how we ended up with some skirmishes in Ayod.
The opposition has also not released any casualty figures from the fighting. A meeting between representatives from the SPLM in opposition and Uganda's president did not take place as scheduled yesterday. It would have been the first reported meeting between President Yoweri Museveni and SPLM in opposition leaders since violence broke out in South Sudan in December. A delegation led by General Alfred Ladu Gore landed in Kampala, but no Ugandan officials came to meet him. And after 6 hours at the airport, they returned to Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, to brief rebel leader Machar. The rebel chairman for humanitarian affairs, Hussein Mar Nyat, says his team is not discouraged by the incident.
So what happened is that we believe it is actually miscommunication between us and the Ugandan authorities. So when we got there to Entebbe, we arrived at 1, up to 5 in the evening. We were not actually received. We tried to make some communication. And, of course, it was like the whole thing is actually that nobody was aware, maybe miscommunication. And then we decided, actually, we consulted our leadership and we came back. So far, our coming back does not mean that we have closed the door of engagement. We're still looking forward that we'll definitely engage the authorities in Uganda, and particularly President Museveni, And this is very important.
Before traveling to Uganda, there must be some people you were communicating with them in that country. Didn't they tell you the right day to come so that you are received by the Ugandan authorities?
Yes, truly, there was communications. But, of course, with communication, sometimes when this thing is not established properly, it can bring some, hiccups. This thing was supposed to be organized by IGAD. Even the tickets were paid by IGAD to facilitate our going. But because of this miscommunication that happened between the two parties, between us and the Uganda authorities and the people who were involved, that's why actually the meeting did not take place or we were not received. Yes, it is something, of course, regrettable, because this situation, if things were done properly, it could have not happened. But again, what is it? Our interest is that we want to engage ourselves with the authorities in Uganda, because there's a lot of mistakes, and we want to bring peace in our country.
You are talking with Ugandan authorities. At the same time, you're putting out a condition that you cannot talk until the Ugandan troops pull out of South Sudan. How does that match, Mr. Hussein?
For sure, that position has not changed. But this will not disturb us. By talking to them and knowing our position on the peace process and the position of the Uganda forces in South Sudan, he may actually come to his sense also of seeing the point that they may actually withdraw. It doesn't harm for us actually to talk to them.
In the African context, when somebody invites you to his house and he refuses to open the door, it means you are not welcome. Do you feel that you were not welcomed in Uganda after having waited at the airport for quite a long time?
Well, we don't take it that way, because we are not going as just one person in our African context. We are actually going as a big team. A big team that is actually visiting the country with an agenda and all these proper things need to be put on the ground first before actually we knock the door. So that's why I'm saying that miscommunication has actually brought some disappointment, whether on our part or with even Uganda authorities, that actually a team that want to dialogue and to discuss issues to do with peace. I think nobody can refuse actually talking about peace. So we don't feel that we were not welcome. We felt that actually there has been miscommunication that actually need to be corrected, need to be put proper. And very soon, this mission may take up, and tomorrow we may talk actually when we are actually in Kampala.
Hussein Mar Niat is the SPLM in opposition chairman for humanitarian affairs. He was speaking from Addis Ababa with my colleague, John Tanza, at the VOA studio in Nairobi. Kenya's capital, Nairobi, has become a magnet for South Sudanese who are fleeing violence in South Sudan. Some left as long ago as December, when violence first erupted in Juba before spreading around the country. But even though the South Sudanese capital is calm now, people continue to leave. They say they don't feel safe in Juba, or they are being constantly harassed. Here again is South Sudan in Focus South Sudan Focus host John Tanza. He met a businessman from Juba who escaped to Nairobi because he says it's anything but business as usual back home for people like him.
Henry Lugali spent the week since he got to Nairobi thinking about the nightmare that life has become back in Juba.
The way people suffer in South Sudan is not good.
Before the conflict started in December, Lugali was a businessman running a busy store in Juba's stomping neighborhood. But since violence erupted on December 15th, he says things have gotten so bad back home that he practically lost the roof over his head.
Because our home, it was near with the home of the president. From there, those people come and remove all the things in the store, two beds, and they have some solar on the top. It was removed also.
Solar panels?
Yeah. They removed the solar, and even he took my car. One car of mine, it was took it.
Who took your car?
These soldiers. They are soldiers, it was tiger soldier.
By tiger soldiers, Lugali means members of President Salva Kiir's Presidential Guard, also called the Tiger Division. Lugali says the same soldiers man the checkpoints that are all around Juba. They used to stop him several times a day, he says. South Sudan Information Minister and government spokesman Michael Makui says checkpoints are normal in times of trouble.
There are certain stages whereby you may be required to be checked, and if you resist to be checked, then definitely you are against that. Anybody who decides to be intransigent anybody who wants to go against the law, anybody who wants to take law into his own hands, these are the people who must be handled. And if he had happened to be one of those intransigent ones, then definitely he could have an encounter with the checkpoint.
But Logale insists he was not intransigent and says the soldiers at the checkpoints harass people like him because he's not from the same ethnic group as they are. One time he says when he was on his way to pick up some items on a list for his shop, he was stopped at a checkpoint and the soldiers asked him,
"Where are you going to?" I'm saying, "I'm going to Dorit." "Where are you from?" I say, "I'm from town." "So which tribe of you?" I say, "I'm Baria." "So where are you going to Dorit if you are Baria?"
Then Logale says the soldiers told him they were going to arrest him. He asked them why. The soldiers told him,
"You have this list of people and you have iPhone. This iPhone, where you get these pictures of referendum?"
I asked the information minister, Michael Makui, if it is illegal to have pictures of the referendum or any historic events on a smartphone. He replied,
"How can you be prevented from carrying pictures of people who are celebrating the referendum? This cannot just be accepted by a sober mind. He must have been carrying other pictures which he knows. Otherwise, nobody will ever stop me from carrying pictures of my celebration."
Logale insists that he is telling the truth. He says he eventually fled Juba because he got tired of being stopped, being harassed, and having to pay kickbacks or hand over his belongings.
You cannot flee because there are so many checkpoints in the town. Eh? There are soldiers there, a prison soldier. They are there, they are checking the cars.
Logale says he noticed, though, that there seem to be different rules at the checkpoints for different people.
So those people checking the cars, it was soldiers. Many of them, they are dinkers. If you get you Equatorian, we remove you and check even after 3 meters, 4 meters, you'll get another one. We'll remove you also out from the car. We'll check again. But if those dinkers come, it's all here. You get you again, we leave them to go.
In a statement released on Christmas Eve, President Kiir condemned those who, quote, are targeting others because of their tribal affiliation, unquote, and said he has ordered the country's security forces not to harass civilians in any way. For South Sudan in Focus, I'm John Tanza, reporting from Nairobi.
Some of South Sudan's lawmakers say they now consider the unsigned media acts the law of the land. Parliament passed the bills in early December, shortly before the outbreak of violence in Juba, but President Salva Kiir never signed them into law. For VOA News, Philip Thon Oleo has more from Juba.
Somas Wani Kundu, chairperson of the National's Information and Communication Committee, says according to South Sudanese law, any act automatically becomes law if the president does not sign it within 30 days.
Media Act was passed long time ago, taken to His Excellency the President as a procedure for assentment. President made his remarks, brought back, we amended before this crisis, and the bill left the Parliament on the 4th of December 2013. It is already taken to His Excellency Presidency office. It becomes a law according to our law. Once the bill passed by the Parliament and taken to His Excellency for assentment, after 30 days, whether I sent it to or not, it has already become a law.
Wani says, had the aid of his specialized committee in charge of information, he will ensure the Justice Ministry prints many copies of the law so it can be distributed widely.
What we are after now, according to this law, we need to find out the delay. Where is it now? So that we ask the Minister of Justice to gazette it. By gazetting means to print it. We need to be printed. So that is given to the people at the symbolic price, such that each and everyone, being the journalist or the security personnel, can know exactly his or her right.
The Access of Information Bill gives every citizen, including journalists, the right to obtain official information unless it poses a threat to national security or someone's privacy. The Media Authority Bill sets up an independent body overseeing press coverage and dealing with complaints. The third bill, the Broadcasting Corporation Bill, provides for the creation of a national independent public service broadcaster. Many South Sudanese journalists have reported being beaten while in police custody. For VOA News, I am Philip Aleu in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Coming up, community leaders in Awil South want their commissioner to step down. Find out why after this.
For all the latest in-depth news and analysis on events in South Sudan, tune in to Voice of America's South Sudan in Focus, Monday through Friday from 1630 to 1700 UTC. You can email us at southsudan@voanews.com. We are also on the web at voanews.com/South Sudan or download our podcast on iTunes. That's South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is the best way to reduce corruption?
The best way to reduce corruption is to put the proper systems into function and reducing avenues that corruption can take place. That is, for example, rogue officers are supposed to be fired.
It all starts with you and me on not accepting bribe or giving bribe.
Things will be done on a transparent manner. If it is a budget, budgets must be actually posed to the people and people know what's the budget for this year and what's expected to be done on this area, than coming to do some audits on what is not known.
To reduce corruption is just each and every, after every 3 months, let it be like what? People coming for what? Monitoring or checking the institutions, or not to leave them for the whole year.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. It's time for our Tuesday health segment, and today we're talking about malaria. And there's good news in the battle against the disease, which is endemic in almost all of South Sudan. The disease is a leading killer in the country, where an estimated 20 to 40% of all healthcare visits are malaria-related. Now, researchers say they have evidence that the malaria parasite lurks in bone marrow, a spongy tissue inside bones where blood cells are produced. The discovery offers hope that new treatments can be found to fight the disease, which kills some 1 million people each year. Carol Pearson reports.
The malaria parasite goes through a number of stages in its life cycle. After an infected mosquito bites someone, parasitic spores travel to the liver, where they grow and divide. Then they enter the bloodstream and multiply, causing the familiar symptoms of malaria: high fever, chills, sweats, fatigue, nausea, and vomiting. But there appears to be another place where immature malaria spores gather and hide: bone marrow. And once there, they can evade the body's defenses as they develop. For about 100 years, researchers have suspected a small amount of the pathogen, called Plasmodium falciparum, burrows deep inside the bones. Matt Marty specializes in malaria transmission at the Harvard School of Public Health in Boston, Massachusetts.
It was assumed that all the blood stages of the parasite are somehow sticking to the blood vessels, but these guys are not. They're outside of the blood vessels. They're in the hematopoietic system where blood is formed. And so drugs have to get there first.
But drugs have a hard time penetrating to the bone marrow, says Marty, which may explain why malaria, out of easy reach of the immune system, is difficult to treat. Investigators discovered the new reservoir of P. falciparum by studying the bone marrow of people who died of malaria. Marty says the findings may help scientists find ways to target those reservoirs during a critical stage of the parasite's life cycle.
So it will be important to find out whether the current anti-malarial therapies are efficiently targeting that site, and it will be important for new drugs to be tested whether they can target that site efficiently.
Researchers report on the role of bone marrow in malaria infection in science translational medicine. For reporter Jessica Berman, I'm Carol Pearson, VOA News.
Community leaders in Awil South County are demanding their commissioner step down. They accuse Jill Mangok-Yell of failing to perform his duties. They've even petitioned the ruling SPLM party and the state government to fire him if he refuses to resign. They say Yell is dictatorial and not addressing important issues. But as Abraham McGough reports from VOA from Awil, Yell says he has no intention of stepping down.
Traditional chiefs and youth representatives say they are dissatisfied with the way Commissioner Jill Mangok-Yell is doing his job. Community leaders say under Yell's leadership, many people have been harassed or arrested and detained arbitrarily under the commissioner's orders. They also accuse Yell of banning farming and livestock rearing activities on land near the county headquarters. They say he discriminates against certain communities whenever asked to resolve communal disputes. The leaders say they have written to the SPLM state office asking the party to remove the commissioner, though party officials deny receiving any petitions. Traditional chiefs from across the county called a news conference today to express what they say is their discomfort with Yell's leadership. Ayoma Colwek is a paramount chief of Awil South County.
The reason we want the new commissioner is because, first of all, he promised us that by this July, he will be ready to go back to the army. And so this chance belongs to Nyok Awani Payam. This is the reason why we came to sit together and select three people, because we need the commissioner who can come and listen to us in our county, in our Payam.
Akol accuses the commissioner Yell of neglecting what he calls burning issues, which residents want him to address, including suspected cases of murder.
We don't want this commissioner because he does not listen to his people and community, and he doesn't want to understand the chiefs and the citizens of the county. That's why we don't want him again to rule us here.
Akol accuses Yell of being militant and dictatorial.
He is ruling us in the way of soldiers, but we are not soldiers. He is ruling by orders and commands.
One youth who did not want to be identified says he too wants Yell removed, calling him dictator.
There is a lot of chaos that has been going on here in the county, and we need a person who can handle the issues of the community without causing problems.
Yell denies treating anyone unfairly and says he will not resign simply because a small minority in the county wants to get rid of him.
I was nominated by the party, and leadership of the party is the one nominated me to be a commissioner in Awil South County. I don't have right, and I do not want to let down the leadership of the party. So I am here responsible for Awil South County according to the mandate of the party. Until the party tell me, you stop from here and come and go in that fight. That is why I can do it, but I cannot make the resignation.
County resident Peter Mangok, one of Commissioner Yell's supporters, says the people calling for his resignation are doing so out of self-interest.
He did a lot of things in Awil South, and if we look back, Awil South is not like the way it was before. And the people of Awil South does not want a person to stay to the power for long.
Yell began serving as a commissioner in 2010. According to Transitional Constitution of South Sudan, commissioners and state ministers are directly answerable to the state governors, and should there arise disputes, it is a sole responsibility of state governor to either sack or suspend commissioner for allegations gets replaced. For VOA News, I'm Abraham Agoth reporting from Awil, Northern Barkazai State.
Scientists, health workers, and activists are meeting at the 20th International AIDS Conference in Australia amid major medical advances in treating AIDS. However, one powerful force stands in the way of treatment for many afflicted with the disease, and that's stigma. A special Voice of America documentary, Living in the Shadows, pulled back the curtain on this challenge. VOA's Anita Powell attended the screening and has this report from the AIDS Conference in Melbourne.
Stigma has stuck to AIDS from the very start. When the virus first began to emerge in the 1980s, it cut a wide swath through two groups that have historically faced their own stigma. gay men, and intravenous drug users. More than 30 years later, however, the face of AIDS has changed. Today's new HIV patient is statistically likely to be a heterosexual African woman. But as VOA's new documentary, Living in the Shadows, shows, as the reach of AIDS has expanded, stigma remains and seems as stubborn as this highly adaptable virus. AIDS stigma remains from Cambodia to Nigeria to Uganda. It even persists in 2014 in developed nations like the U.S. and Canada, says immunologist Dr. Anthony Fauci, who is director of the National Institute of Allergy and Infectious Diseases. Fauci noted the powerful role of stigma in discussing the famous recent case of the Mississippi baby, a baby born with HIV contracted from her mother, then treated aggressively and put in remission for just over 2 years, before again showing signs of infection. The baby's mother, he said, did not get prenatal care that would have identified her HIV status and protected the baby from contracting the virus. That failure to get care, he said, is often a consequence of stigma.
In the United States, a developed nation, there is still, as shown on the film, even in the city that I live in, considerable stigma associated with it, some of which is very subtle, that prevents people from getting into the appropriate care at the appropriate time. So there's a lot of implications of that.
In Nigeria, where it's against the law to be gay, gay rights activist Afani Kelly Orazulike painted a dark picture of the stigma around AIDS and homosexuality.
It's incredibly amazing how we have lived through the work that we do in Nigeria and how we have been able to survive in terms of ensuring that people have access to healthcare services and access to social justice, because living by the day gets more scarier than it was the previous day.
And AIDS stigma affects not just patients, but their providers as well. Dr. Julio Montaner has worked in the field for decades and says that stigma could be holding back important advances. He described, for example, his struggles in getting government approval to set up a safe needle exchange site for drug users in Vancouver, Canada.
Yet we suffer a stigma by association. And, you know, I don't see too many times when my friend, who is a cardiologist, gets asked, why do you do this work? What motivates you to do this work? Why are you so passionate about it? I mean, people accept that being a cardiologist, you're supposed to be passionate about cardiac disease. But we get asked that all the time. You know, how the hell do you care about people who use drugs and, you know, and this and that and the other thing?
Montana does not offer an answer to that question. Why, he said, should he have to explain himself any more than any other doctor treating any other disease? That's one of the many questions that haunts this deadly virus and continues to plague the fight against AIDS. Anita Powell, VOA News, Melbourne, Australia.
That's all the time we have for this Tuesday. We leave you with the song Saida by JJD Musica.
Evangelio Anna Maria Saida Maluje de
Habibi Isimu Saida Isimu Sukeli Wawu Sajemi Maniki Geni Ijuba Muhabatanina Bada Bitara
Ida Kanze Milan
Saida Seida, Gisimusukeli wawu sajemi Hiya jamani kigeni Kijuba muhabatanina Bada bitarabaha
Koroji, koromona Fekiri ya jama Juba
Inageni mudata sabasena Alabari kunina matrimania Hiya kumusakrige pikare tumu Nakadi hasa ya marija
malu jete ya mama
ni mudada sabasena ala bari kunina matrimania ya kumusafiri bikari tumu nakadi hasa ya marija
sol bira ku mumaria asan biriza fibebe malu jete seida ita nesitu
Telefonu wele waraka mafi Yalba sadu mama wenu
Corona, my poetic.
We've been listening to